Hello, this is Randy Thompson from the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to Music Review. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. For the next half hour, I shall be reading articles about music from such sources as the New York Times, the News and Observer, The Week Magazine, Rolling Stone, and Entertainment Weekly. Music Review is underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. This program is designed to provide the latest coverage of classical, folk, jazz, blues, rock, country, and pop music news. But first, these musical trivia questions. Today's musical trivia questions come to us from the website onthisday.com. Question number one. It was on this very day back in 1964 that the publisher of the song Louie Louie offered $1,000 to anyone who could do what? Was it A, sing the lyrics to Louie Louie backwards? B, find suggestive words anywhere in that song? C, mimic exactly the Kingsman singing of that song? Or D, testify under oath in court that Louie Louie was plagiarized? So why did the publisher of that song offer $1,000 on this day back in 1964? And question number two, what did George Harrison do on this day back in 1969? Was it A, recorded his first song? B, had his tonsils removed? C, bought a Rolls Royce? Or D, left the Beatles? So what did George Harrison do on this very day back in 1969? Anyway, the answers to these two important questions will be given, as usual, at the end of today's program. Our transitions come to us from that same website, onthisday.com. And today, quote-unquote, is the weekend of February the 6th. Well, it was on this very day, back in 1943, that Frank Sinatra made his debut as vocalist on radio's Your Hit Parade. Sinatra's debut, today, 1943. Meanwhile, it was 47 years ago today that Stephen Stills became the first rock performer to record on digital equipment in Los Angeles's Record Plant Studio. He recorded a new version of the song Cherokee, and that was just back in 1979.
Moon, you saw me standing alone, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own.
Tony Bennett's Blue Moon introduces our jazz music news. One of 2025's best movies is a music biopic of a largely forgotten figure. This is published in Us Weekly on October 29, 2025, by Jason Truss. Before Richard Rodgers collaborated with Oscar Hammerstein, he was part of another duo with a name history has largely forgotten, Lorenz Larry Hart. That's about to change with Blue Moon, Richard Linklater's terrific film about a man who reached the top of his profession and lived long enough to see himself touch the bottom. Blue Moon is one of 2025's best movies, and a large reason why is the lead performance by an actor who, like Hart himself, is long overdue for recognition. So what is Blue Moon about? Blue Moon takes place at Sardi's, a popular Broadway bar and restaurant on the night of March 31, 1941. What's so important about that particular day? It's the opening night of Oklahoma, a new musical from Rodgers and Hammerstein, whose groundbreaking music and lyrics would change Broadway and the musical format forever. Rodgers' former collaborator, Lorenz Hart, had nothing to do with Oklahoma, but he wants to celebrate Rodgers' success and ruminate over his private and professional failures. Sardi's is the place to do it. And while he waits for Rodgers and others to arrive after the show ends, he chats it up with the friendly bartender, Eddie, and the handsome piano player, Knuckles. Hart doesn't think much of Oklahoma, but he knows it will be a huge hit, and what that success will inevitably signify that his kind of songs are out of fashion, and the theater world has already moved on. Down, but not out. Larry still has enough energy to engage in a flirtation with Elizabeth Weiland, who represents everything Hart is not. Young, optimistic, and free of disappointment and cynicism. But this would-be love affair can't mask what's clear to almost everyone, even Hart. He's on his way down, and there's nothing he can do about it. The music biopic subgenre has been popular lately, with 2024's A Complete Unknown, and this year's Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. While those movies focused on popular musicians at key creative periods in their budgeting careers, Blue Moon focuses specifically on Hart's lowest point, when his former collaborator is about to have one of his best successes, while he has nothing but an impulse to drink and talk to strangers. Director Richard Linklater is smart to focus on this key point in Hart's life because it's rich in dramatic material that few filmmakers have mined. We're all used to the rags-to-riches stories of famous people, but what happens once the spotlight fades and the curtains come down? Hart isn't driven mad by his obsession with his past glory. Instead, he's just sad, and it's the way he grapples with his depression, with biting humor and one last stab at romance, that makes Blue Moon so fascinating to watch. Ethan Hawke is unrecognizable and gives his best performance to date. If you place a photo of Lorenz Hart and Ethan Hawke side by side, you'd see two men who look nothing alike. But acting isn't just mimicry. It's conveying the essential spirit of the character, even if the physical attributes don't exactly align. That's why the 5'10" Hawk looks and feels like the barely 5-foot-tall Hart. With the help of clever camera angles and generous prosthetics, Hawk embodies a man who compensates for his short stature and receding hairline with his quick wit and manic hustle. At a time when the multiplex can feel bleak and populated with overstuffed superhero pictures, noisy anime imports, and tired franchise films, Blue Moon is a rarity. An intelligent and sophisticated movie for adults. To paraphrase one of Hart's most famous song titles, it will leave you a little bewitched, somewhat bothered, and enjoyably bewildered. It's currently showing in theaters now. Blue Moon. And in music research and technology, we have this article, How Old Is Your Music Taste? Spotify will tell you, though you may not like it. Spotify Wrapped is bluntly telling users their quote-unquote listening age, which in many cases is several decades older or younger than their actual age. It's a calculated strategy. This is written by Rachel Treisman on the 4th of December, 2025, in NPR.org. Okay, so how did Spotify calculate this? Spotify did not respond to NPR's request for comment by the time of publication, but on a web page explaining its process, the company says listening age is based on the idea of a quote-unquote reminiscence bump, which it describes as the tendency for people to feel most connected to music from their youth. Research shows that adults' brains especially hold on to memories from their teenage years, both generally and when it comes to music. One 2013 study, for example, found that young adults had strong positive memories of the music that their parents and even grandparents loved when they were that age. There's the idea that there are life stages where we are receptive and open to new music, where music sort of shapes the experiences that we have. And as we get past those years, we kind of stay in that moment in time, says Professor Marcus Collins of University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. Spotify says it combs through a listener's songs to identify the five-year span of music that you engaged with more than other listeners your age. It hypothesizes that this five-year window matches a listener's quote-unquote reminiscence bump. Collins says it's a win-win situation because the best marketing on the planet is us. Spotify is trying to get business for its platform, he says, but also helping people connect, which in turn helps it even more. Listening age tells us more about ourselves and gives us something new to talk about with our friends, especially if it's extreme or unexpected. Collins says that he, like most people, learns that Spotify Wrapped is live from friends posting theirs on social media rather than TV or online advertisements. That, in turn, makes him want to see and share his stats, not because I love Spotify so much, but because I want to participate in the social practices of my people. K-pop's Girls' Generation singing Goodbye, Hello introduces our rock and pop music news. How the West was won, K-pop's great assimilation gambit. The crossover hits attack stacking Grammy nods this year have little in common with the culture that birthed them, but they're winning the chart game. This is published on January 29, 2026 in NPR.org by Sheldon Pierce. K-pop Demon Hunters is one of several properties born of the modern K-pop industry to be nominated by the Recording Academy this year. Blackpink member Rose's Bruno Mars collaboration APT is nominated for Song and Record of the Year. Both Gap Golden and APT are competing in the Best Pop Duo Group Best Performance category, and the Multi-Ethnic Sextet, Cat's Eye, is up for Best New Artist. These are not the first nods for K-pop at the ceremony. BTS has flirted with Best Pop Duo Group Performance since 2021, but collectively they represent a Western embrace of the form that feels unprecedented. Rosé, for starters, is the first lead K-pop artist to be nominated in any of the Big Four award categories, and in so doing, these developments point to a bigger question, one embodied by EJ's anti-idol career trajectory. When we talk about a K-pop song now, what exactly do we mean? The article skips down and ends with this. That could also be your takeaway watching the Apple TV Plus series, K-Pop. The show, clearly meant to be an appealing first exposure for K-pop outsiders, selects top 40 hits from across the decades and pairs the original artist up with Korean idols who transform them in ways meant to resemble the K-pop formula. As one YouTube commenter suggests, many of the revamps feel like karaoke, limited in their rearrangements, meaningfully devoid of what they refer to as K-pop elements. Yet they do recognize one performance as outlier. ATEEZ, teaming up with Kylie Minogue to rework Can't Get You Out of My Head. The arrangement of which feels a little instructive for what, under the hood of a K-pop song, makes it a K-pop song. The original Can't Get You Out of My Head is a daydream, hook after hook, interlocked like a series of train cars, bliss that points that bleeds into one another and never resolve. The ATEEZ version is theatrical, brooding, and baroque, full of jagged edges, surges, and breakdowns. When the boys sing Set Me Free in Korean, it is not with Kylie's beckoning siren energy, but a face-melting intensity. Look beyond genre, and you can find K-pop there. Songcraft as melodramatic montage. Kate's Eye, in a few years since debuting on a reality completion, has made a different case that K-pop is just a world flow, that its processes aren't primarily musical or indigenous, and that it was never about a sound by Koreans for the world so much as a basis for multinational satellite network. As an institution, the Recording Academy has never been on the cutting edge. But music's biggest night does not tell a story of where the industry at large places value. None of this would matter if not for the feeling that something is being lost in this process. Top-level K-pop sacrificing its signature qualities for the sake of broader acceptance. Initially, K-pop scaling up was an act of importation, widening the taste and fluency of the American listener, recalibrating our musical and cultural and lyrical lexicons. The inflection point we're living through now issues far fewer challenges to a new fan's taste. The system has arrived, but the sound has moved closer to a Western one to make it happen. There are deeper conversations to be had about aesthetics and dance, or about K-pop breathing new life into the music video as a medium. But speaking strictly of the music, it is hard not to feel the character of the thing eroding as it stretches to satisfy bodies like the Grammys. So how did you do on today's trivia questions? Well, the answer to our first question, it was on this very day back in 1964 that the publisher of the song, Louie Louie, offered $1,000 to anyone who could do what? Was it A, sing the lyrics to Louie Louie backwards? Was it B, find suggestive words anywhere in that song? C, mimic exactly the Kingsmen singing of that song? Or D, testify under oath in court that Louie Louie was plagiarized? Correct answer? Answer B, Louie Louie's publisher offered $1,000 to anyone who could find suggestive lyrics in that song. Turns out that just a week earlier, the governor of Indiana had declared that Louie Louie was pornographic, and he requested that radio stations throughout Indiana not play that song. As noted in an NPR article from 2023, titled Louie Louie, The Story Behind the Song Everyone Knows But No One Understands, by Dina Preshep, Louie Louie, recorded by the Kingsmen, began climbing the pop chart 60 years ago. It's a song almost everybody can recognize, but almost nobody understands the words to, and even fewer people know the story of the song's evolution. How it went from West Coast dance hit to party anthem, with an FBI investigation and Supreme Court case along the way. The first recording of the song dates back to 1957. Richard Berry, an L.A. musician, recorded a song about a sailor who has to ship out and leave his girl behind. While the words, written in a fake Jamaican patois, were an attempt to tap into the calypso music popular at the time, Harry Belafonte was topping the charts, by the way, the melodic riff came from a song called El Loco Cha-Cha, recorded by Cuban-American bandleader René Touzé. The song's rhythm made it a favorite on jukeboxes and at teenage dances. Rather than featuring free-form dancing, dances at the time would often require specific steps to specific songs or beats. The mashed potato, the stroll, the Watusi. The cha-cha was on the list as well, and Louie Louie had a great cha-cha beat. The studio that these bands were going in to record had very little experience recording bands. Rock bands were sort of new in the area. It was a jingle studio. They made radio ads for, you know, car lots and for bakeries and for radio stations. So I don't think that they were used to setting up the microphones properly for a loud, pounding rock band. Band members have said the engineer hung a microphone high above them, causing Jack Eli, the singer, to have to shout to be heard, and his enunciation wasn't helped by the fact that he wore braces. It turned out having words nobody could understand would prove surprisingly important. We were on the front page of every newspaper saying that we were corrupting the moral fiber of the youth of America, remember singer Dirk Peterson. And J. Edgar Hoover launched an investigation. They woke us up in the middle of the night pounding on the door, FBI, FBI. The magistrate, I guess he's called a judge, he said, "Let me hear it," says Peterson. And the judge said, "Why are you fighting over this? It's a piece of junk." And so he said, "Listen, nobody can tell what it says. I'm going to deem it unintelligible at any speed and lift the ban." Peterson says the controversy is part of what kept it on the charts. The kids thought we got away with murder, and from then on we were able to go on television shows. Shindig, Hullabaloo, American Bandstand. Louie Louie has now been covered by a ridiculous number of times. It's a marching band standard and has been featured in countless advertisements and movies. He said the reason for the popularity is because of its simpleness, its stupidness. He goes, three chords and the most mundane beat possible. He goes, any idiot could learn it, and they all did. 60 years later, they're still playing it, because music isn't always about complexity or even skill. Sometimes it's just about a song that makes you feel good, even if you can't understand the words. And the answer to our second question, what did George Harrison do on this day back in 1969? Was it A, he recorded his first song, B, had his tonsils removed, C, bought a Rolls Royce, or D, left the Beatles? Correct answer B. It turns out that Harrison had his tonsils removed on this day, back in 1969, at London's University College Hospital. Perhaps not that interesting by itself, but what was unusual about this procedure is that the tonsils were immediately destroyed, so they could not be sold. Now, that part is weird. So let's close out today's program with Louie Louie. The $1,000 offer may still stand, by the way. So see if you can detect any profanity or obscenity. Well, we're still unintelligible, I guess. Well, we've run out of time for today's episode of Music Review. Be sure to tune in at the same time next week. This program's also available as a podcast after the broadcast in our website, ncreadingservice.org. As we leave you now, remember these words. Kindness is a language which blind people see and deaf people hear. The content of this program, intended for people who are blind or print impaired. If you have a suggestion for music to feature on this program, please leave a message for me at 919-832-5138. I'm Randy Thompson, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Music Review, underwritten by Bill McClure, tuning pianos in the Raleigh area since 1968. For more information or to schedule a piano tuning, please call 919-779-1755. So long. Until next time.